The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent.
Welcome to the Technology Podcast, podcast number 346. The last podcast was at the end of May. And I feel bad because I've had plenty of items, but yet I've been going through quite a bit health-wise. And have only started feeling better recently. I was never sick, but had some other health things going on. So, I needed to deal with that, and that's why there's been a long delay. Shortly after Podcast 345's release, Transit App became Metro's official application for use, costing them absolutely nothing, and saving them $240,000. That's the first segment. After dealing with all of my health issues, I recently started recording, and here's what I've come up with. Capital One didn't want their information used from a report from a security company that has been known for doing this work for years. What is this company hiding? Because Mandiant is one of the best in the business in telling you what's up, and you should take their advice and fix what the issues are. This is in regards to a court case. The state of antivirus. I recently blogged about the state of antivirus after getting an email asking to be editing a blog post some 3 years prior. And instead of doing that, I told them I would link them in a piece thanks to Sean Everest. And so that's exactly what I did. And it was well received by Sean. Yet, you be the judge. Michael in Indiana has thoughts and I comment in regards to Trust No One technology, otherwise known as TNO. And finally, Krebs on Security penned a very good article recently in regards to the Department of Homeland Security's website, eVerify.com. which is supposed to help you make sure that your social security number does not get used in employment scams. Does it work? You be the judge. Contact information is at the end of that file, but I'll briefly give it here. Email an iMessage tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975, and if you've got me on other social media, you are welcome to utilize that as well. The Technology Podcast, Podcast 346, is coming up next with Transit App. Everybody, I'm going to take this podcast into a different turn. I'm going to talk about transit apps a little bit. And going to talk about a change that Los Angeles Metro decided that they were going to make, which I honestly think is going to be better in the long run for them and for everybody that uses the system as a whole. Now, before I get started, I want to talk about their original app. Now, their original app was called Go Metro, and it was accessible with screen readers such as VoiceOver, and I'm sure that there was an Android app, and I'm sure that they did the best they could with it. And I reviewed on this podcast version 3 of their app. Now, I don't remember when the podcast was out. It's probably well before I moved the podcast to Anchor. And if you want me to provide you a copy, I can look it up. And I can send you a copy at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Just send me an email and I'll be happy to try and dig that up for you. I have all of the podcasts available. When version 4 came out, I talked about it as well on my podcast and talked about what I liked and didn't like. And the thing that bothers me about that app is that it still doesn't lack a crucial feature which would help everybody. Now, the data that Metro provides was pretty consistent throughout all of the apps that I have. Go Metro, Transit, and Move It. Now, Move It wanted to know more about whether the accuracy of, like, for example, when we were to get off was accurate. They do it halfway through the trip. And when I got to that screen, I always gave them a bad rating because of the fact that it didn't seem to be very accurate. It was saying, you know, get off in an hour and a half. And it was off by quite a while. I never liked that thing. It pops up and said, how are we doing with, you know, making sure you're on time type thing that they give. And I left feedback all the time saying this isn't accurate. The interface on Move It is interesting to say the least as well. To get the other buses, you gotta actually double tap on the bus line, and sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't. It is accessible, and I do like them for their stop announcements as well. Now, Transit has a very interesting bug, and I've only seen it twice, and I don't know how they can fix it. It has to do with going to North Hollywood. It tells me approaching North Hollywood well away from there, and it also would tell me approaching DeSoto when I was on the 750 bus when we approached Winnetka's bus stop. Now, those are minor things. It's not a big to-do, honestly. I've sent them some data, and hopefully it'll eventually get fixed, but these are minor things. But Transit app is much more polished. I mean, when you think about COVID-19 and the transit agencies that run your bus and your train and your system needing to adjust because 70% of your riders are casual riders going places. You gotta make a lot of adjustments. And Transit, when they feed that data to them, they told me they pick that up every day at midnight. There could have been a potential bug at one point. They probably refined it because I was telling them that they added a stop and it wasn't there. They were telling me it updates every night, so when your transit agency does implement it, they feed it and we pick that up. And maybe that was what it was. It's not a big to do. You understand how the app works. Now, I said that they had updated some time ago, and the interface changed slightly a little bit. And I never demoed it. So maybe this is the right time to do it. And it won't take long. I'm going to unlock my phone. And skip the notifications and open Transit. And they recently updated. They Transit. Made some changes. Acorn Hills, Calabasas, Warner CTR, Westlake Village, at stop, Canoga, and Venera Freeway off ramp. Next departures in 53 minutes, at 13, 38, at 14, 43, adjustable. Swipe up or down with one finger to adjust the value. Metro 161,000 Oaks, Agoura Hills, Calabasas, Warner CTR, Westlake Village, at stop, Canoga, and Venera Freeway off ramp. Next departures in 52 minutes real time, at 13, 38, at 14, 43, adjustable. So let's swipe down.
Metro 161,000 Oaks, Agoura Hills, Calabasas, Warner CTR, Canoga Station, at stop, Canoga, and Burbank. Next departures in 42 minutes, at 13, 28, at 14, 33, possible text, minutes.
Now this is all I really wanted to demo. No swiping up and down for, you know, change direction and all of this. You swipe down or you swipe up.
Metro 161,000 Oaks, Agoura Hills, Calabasas, Warner CTR, Westlake Village, at stop, Canoga, and Venera Freeway off ramp. Next departures in 51 minutes real time, at 13, 38, at 14, possible text, minutes, Metro 1, possible text, minutes, Metro 161,000, Metro 161,000 Oaks, Agoura Hills, Calabasas, Warner CTR, Canoga Station, at stop, Canoga, and Burbank. Next departures in 41 minutes, at 13, 28, at 14, 33, selected, 161, 161, change departure.
Now we can change departure.
More departures. Line notice posted 1 hour. More departures.
More departures. Line notice
posted 1 hour ago. Metro has adjusted service in response to COVID-19 and face coverings are now required on all buses and trains. Posted on May 21st, 2020 at 10:15. Source, Metro LA.
You can.
Not receiving notifications. Tap to change notification settings button.
Get notifications. And that's really all I wanted to do. It is very intuitive. They can get notices, and if you subscribe to those alerts, you can get them. If there's a delay on the red, blue, purple, gold, and green lines, the major rail lines, you can get notified. I'm not going to do a full demo here. That's not what this is about. The announcement is that Metro is partnering with these guys at Transit App. There's an article on the blog that goes into my thoughts takes a portion of the blog post which I wanted to highlight, and I link to the source post. This is something that is very, very good for writers. No more downloading two apps to get what you want. Everything is right there in transit. I am liking this new change. In fact, the last Metro event I was at, some people were asking, you know, what app do I use? And the rep was saying Transit. The people that I deal with, one of them recommends Transit. I think this is going to be the best time ever in transit news for Los Angeles County. This is something that can work no matter where you go. If the agency is providing them data, then you'll have it. You won't need to download any specific app. It works with quite a number of agencies in the United States. I don't think we can go wrong with this move. It costs Metro nothing. It can save them $240,000 to try and develop their own app. You know, or whatever the number is. I don't remember the exact number, and it doesn't matter. You can read about it. But this is the way transportation should have been done. They should have never done their own. It's hard to do an app and make it work. And the folks at Transit did exactly that. This is absolutely awesome. This is what I've been trying to say for a long time when I used Go Metro. Why are you doing this? Why are you making your own? Somebody turned me on the Transit app, and I've never really looked back. I mean, I did try Move It, and I have Move It. And it works. It's just a very interesting interface when you find the line you want and then you have to do something to get it to do the other direction, and it's based on corners, and it just for me I don't like that. But people will use that app and people like that app, and that's why there's choice. Now Google Maps and Apple Maps will continue to have the data because Metro believes in open data, so anyone who wants it can have it. So they're not going to say don't just use Transit. You can use Google or Apple if you want. But the official app for Los Angeles will now be Transit. Congratulations, Transit app. You've earned it. I am due for a podcast. Yes, I know. The month of June has been rough. We started with a segment on transit and then sort of had some health issues. So I am here. The podcast is not gone anywhere. And I have had topics that have been on my mind that I wanted to talk about, including the recent news of Capital One, and of course we know Paige Thompson and that big hack that took place. And there was an article, and you can look this up, that talks about Capital One saying that they do not have to disclose any information that Mandiant, the firm that they used to help them determine what went wrong, they don't have to turn over that report. And it's been a topic that I've been wanting to bring up. I did blog about it. And this and several other topics have been on my mind, and I got to thinking, you know, after dealing with some stuff that needed to be taken care of, that if the particular breach was found to be your fault, because you misconfigured something, and the report you get indicates that while Paige was an Amazon customer and he, she, it, whatever you want to call her, because I've heard reports that she has wanted to do some changing, and that's not for this podcast, but that's what I've heard anyhow. We'll call her she. She has gone and done what she has done, apparently. And you say that, number one, it's not your fault because, you know, the hacker got in. Well, yes, it is, because the reports indicate that you misconfigured it. So, if it's a misconfiguration, you know, somebody at your company had something to do with it, right? I mean, clearly, Paige didn't have anything to do with it. Apparently, Paige not only went after you, but went after other companies named in this indictment. And that's a problem. Turns out that misconfiguration is only part of the problem. I mean, you've got database hacks, and other types of hacks that are well beyond my scope of understanding and covering, because I've got articles so far back and I'm behind in articles as well. So there's plenty I still need to catch up on and read. But when I sit here and recollect about Capital One saying we don't have to make this report public. We want it private because we don't want anybody to know. Well, it's already been known that if people go and search on any breach, whether it's Capital One, whether it's the Jared Reimer Network, whether it's FreshBooks, or any company, I'm just using names off the top of my head here, but any company, I mean, if FreshBooks got owned, we'd all know about it. They're a big company. I think they've got over 10 million customers now, last I had heard. You know, that is a lot of customers who invoice, send billing, get paid, have timesheets. You know, if they had a breach, that's a big problem. Verizon, AT&T, Comcast, the list goes on. You know, what about all these providers who have trust no one services? If they got owned, that's a huge deal. And yeah, they don't have access to help you recover your data, but they do have stuff stored for you when you authenticate correctly. You know, LastPass, they've had problems. I mean, I'm naming companies and situations. And speaking of trust no one stuff, Michael in Indiana has a very interesting story he'd like to tell about one company and experience he had. And I don't think he's alone in that, but that's neither here nor there for this. What about the rest of the companies? How does that work? I mean, this is just beyond repair, right? We must try and get better. I mean, I know that everybody is having a bad year. This year has probably been the worst year we've ever had as a society. And I know that breaches are going to be abound. There's not going to be any way around it. The actors know this. The new work at home initiative is going to make it even easier. So companies big and small need to understand what is in store. If you're found to have a problem, you know, let's fix it. Let's learn from the mistakes. It's not going to get any easier. And if COVID-19 has taught us anything, the actors haven't stopped, even though they said they were going to stop. And that's another topic I've been really thinking about lately. I've been thinking about topics, but I just haven't been in any position to record. I've been dealing with issues that I'm not going to go into on this podcast, but I've started to feel better, even though the last day of June was a bad day for me. But for the most part, I started feeling better recently, and I'm going to be here. The information that I talked about in transit is still valid. It's not going anywhere. It's only going to get better. But now I'm interested in recording and getting a podcast out because I need to get one out. And I know that people are interested in what I have to say about all sorts of topics, including this Capital One ordeal, which is probably not going to get any easier for the company. If you've read the latest in the Capital One ordeal when it came to Mandiant and their, I don't have to disclose the report because it doesn't mean anything to the case. Let me know your thoughts. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Is antivirus dead, as we've once known it? Because I got an email once, some time back, from somebody who wanted me to link to ESET in a 2017 piece that I don't think anybody would have ever found. And I've gotten emails from people wanting me to link to very old posts. Now, I'm not getting rid of them, but I'm just not going to edit them because it may never be looked at again. But I had an idea after receiving an email from Sean Everest in New Zealand about Windows 10 and linking to several things in regards to 2004. And I wrote up a blog post, but I thought I'd put it in thoughts. Now, the blind community is at a disadvantage. It's at a disadvantage because most of the programs out there have become inaccessible with access technology software, such as screen readers. Now, before you go saying it's not accessible, if you have to do a whole lot of work to get it to work, and you mainly have to click, it's not accessible to a blind person who cannot see the screen well enough or at all to do anything. However, that being said, there are people in this community who can use software that enlarges the screen for them so they can see what is on the screen, and they have speech capability, so if their eyes get tired, they don't have to struggle with having to deal with the trouble of reading. Now, with that being said, the software today, such as F-Secure, Trend Micro's products, ESET's products, and others, may not be all that accessible to the disabled community. Malwarebytes has been recommended to me. And from what I can gather, I haven't downloaded it and installed it yet, but it, for the most part, can be set and forget it because you can tab around and set settings and do. That's great. I'm almost tempted to go get the program and give it a spin. And I'll tell you why. In an earlier post on the blog, I put out a plea to antivirus vendors to make their products accessible. Because at one point, I had downloaded a file that I knew was malicious. It was one of these types of files we've talked about before. You know, the ones that say something of the following. Hello, we were not able to deliver your package today. This is UPS, and we want you to download this file and review it. Or whatever the instructions may say. This file, in this case, was an executable or a zip file too, or both. Now I looked in the zip file and I believe this particular one was an executable, but you may get emails with harmless PDFs. I opened them, I read them, it didn't do any harm. But then again, I just opened it from the attachment. I didn't save it to the computer first. But it could have been booby-trapped with something or another to make me get infected. And the software that I mentioned above, except for Malwarebytes, because I'm not familiar with it, so I'm going to exclude them on purpose, would have blocked it with heuristics. Which means it looks at the file and it's monitoring its behavior and it gets it to do what it's supposed to do. And if the antivirus product doesn't like it, then you won't be able to run it. It will block it. Now, back in the old days, antivirus was able to work based on signatures. But there are so many different variations of the same family of virus or worm or Trojan or what have you that this approach is not always the best to take. So the antivirus programs have heuristic checking. So it checks the behavior of a file. All right, this is a Word document. What is this Word document doing? Is it just opening Word and allowing you to view it? Or is it a Word document asking you to accept macros, and once you do, then you have something downloaded to your machine. And it can look at the file. It can even do this with zip files. It can extract zip files and look into them to tell you if they're safe. Now, I ran, at the time, Microsoft Security Essentials because I was on a Windows 7 machine. This file. And it did not pop up any warnings. None whatsoever. And I got a little suspicious. Why isn't this file being detected? I know it's dangerous. It's got an executable inside of a zip. Why? Because Windows Defender doesn't know about heuristics. But the problem is as I said above, the programs that know about that aren't accessible. I know people are wedded to Norton antivirus, which really had problems with my machine well, you know, before this podcast started. It was running slow and everything. I used a program called Vexaira. It works well. It found stuff, and Central Command was awesome. Now, I don't know if they're still around. So, at that particular time, it was accessible. And they were around. But why aren't the big ones like Trend Micro and F-Secure and ESET accessible anymore? We were recommended to use ESET at one point. I even used Trend Micro for a while. F-Secure had told me they aren't accessible with access technology. I said, would it be possible for you to do that? I like the work they do. Mikko Haipan does great talks. We featured him numerous times on this podcast. But I've never heard another word. It would behoove antivirus companies to make their software accessible and give everybody a fair shot at the best protection possible for today's internet. It's not good enough to be able to just say, oh, just use Windows Defender and Microsoft Security Essentials, and maybe Malwarebytes. I don't think that's going to work anymore. I think we need a comprehensive solution that doesn't bog down the system and be able to use it on a day-to-day basis to protect our data, our files, and our livelihoods. Each person is going to make a mistake. We've all done it. Even I've done it. I went to look for AVG. I found something that said AVG. Installed it on a brand new computer. And it was telling me there were viruses. And there were not viruses. It was installed on a brand new machine. And I knew I downloaded the wrong program. But I don't have the help I once did any longer. That particular topic is covered on an earlier podcast if you want to go look that up. But suffice it to say, I can't be playing around with programs. I need to find something that works because Windows Defender doesn't do a thing for me. I think it caught something once when it did a scan unbeknownst to me and it asked me what I wanted to do and it happily took care of it. But for the most part, it's silent, doesn't tell me much of anything. I could have downloaded who knows what. Now, House Call by Trend Micro is accessible, but it doesn't scan the whole hard drive. It only goes so far and then it stops. Okay, that's fine. It does system stuff. But what other programs are out there? There have got to be other programs that are out there. I think VirusTotal, at one point when I uploaded a file once, compared the file with like 70 different antivirus software packages Most I've never heard of. But I wouldn't know where to go look for them. Try them out. There's got to be a solution out there, guys. There has to be. I don't know exactly what it is. But we got to push the industry to make something accessible. I mean, I really like Trend Micro, because what Trend Micro does is, if you're on a web page and there's a portion of the web page that is inaccessible because of the fact that it may be a problem, it will go ahead and block that portion of the web page and it'll tell you. And the portion of the web page that's safe, it'll let you read and manage. If the whole web page is a problem, it won't let you go there. It'll pop up a message and it'll tell you. That's the type of protection I want. I just wish it was accessible so we could use it. I would gladly pay for it again. Now, some people may say, well, what about the opposite side? You know, security software screws it up. And Sean Everest left a comment and he said, you know what, I've had bad experiences. Well, your intuition should be used. If you're not sure, don't run it. That's a good step, and I like his approach. Windows Defender as a safeguard, if it ever works, and your intuition to do the rest. But what if you're tired and you download whatever it is you download, and then you find out the next day that your computer just got screwed and you can't remember why? Well, the antivirus program never picked it up. Why? Because Windows Defender didn't have definitions for it. So again, you know, we need both worlds, I think. But how do we accomplish that? How do we get these companies? I mean, I'm one blogger. I can't do it myself. There's no way I can do it myself. So that we've got to get these companies to understand there's a market of people that may be able to pay for it, even if they offer it, you know, as low as possible. You know, not all antivirus is cheap, you know, but, you know, if it can be somewhere between $10 and, say, $50 for the year, I would gladly pay for it. So what do you guys think? Email iMessage tech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or if you have me on other social media, you can comment there. Coming up next, we're going to talk about TNO. And we're going to start the discussion with Michael in Indiana with comments in regards to one phone app that doesn't even tell you it's TNO. But when he described it to me, it definitely sounded TNO to me. Let's discuss this as the podcast continues.
I used Authy. It was a authenticator for, and I had it set up with Facebook. The problem was, and feel free to interject your own comments in wherever you want. When I switched phones, they are a T&O, and because they're a T&O and they don't tell you that, they didn't save my passcode and there was no way for me to get it. So I actually had a really hard time getting into Facebook. I actually ended up getting my Facebook locked out and then had to get it unlocked. And when I got it unlocked, I told Facebook that it wasn't me that locked it, and it unlocked it and let me in, and then I was able to discontinue the two-factor authentication. These apps need to tell you if they're TNOs or not.
Michael, I'm truly sorry that you've had this experience, and I really think that there needs to be a change. As discussed back then when this became a topic in Livewire's room, the problem we have here is that Authy did not indicate that they were TNO. Nothing in their literature, on their app description, nothing in their setup process. And the only reason why he had a problem was because he had switched phones and he did get a code, but his only method of using technology nowadays is a phone. And while I understand his predicament, these companies need to be aware of that. Now, I've not used Authy. I'm sure that I would be fine because I would be able to store the backup code, because it did ask for a backup code. It said, if you don't have this, then we can't help you, on a forgot password link. Now, why do you have a forgot password link if you do not have the capability of helping your customer, like Michael, who had a legitimate reason for not having one? Right? He's got a phone. He's not going to copy and paste the particular code in a file, which then may or may not have transferred properly if you changed phones. The TNO allows people to be able to use a product and the company doesn't have your data. They're basically a centralized hub and the stuff is stored on your device. And that's well and good. I don't see why he needs to apologize for being angry, because he was angry before he recorded that file you just heard. And that is sad. Like, if Authy would have said during setup, you have got to save this code, because if you don't, we can't help you. And that gives the user, like Michael, an opportunity to say, you know what? I don't want to use this. Now, there are people like Michael in this world who either have one device, or if they have multiple devices, they are not willing, for whatever their technical reasons are, to set up any password manager or anything else for that matter. They want to use passwords and routines that work for them, and they should be okay with that. The problem is that the landscape has definitely changed and we need to adapt. Now, I'm not saying that every single person has to adapt. Every single person is going to have their own needs. and every person is going to need to evaluate what works for them. Not one solution is going to fit all. But trust no one means that this company cannot help you. You know, they're providing an app to be able to allow you to authenticate and do the job that you need to do, but you need to keep track of the key that unlocks the account should you change your device or something of that sort. That's what TNO means. TNO means trust no one. And I am truly sorry. I agree with Michael that they should have done something. He sent me a copy of the app description, and nowhere did it say trust no one. That's unacceptable. It needs to say something. In the app name, it should be Authy, trust no one, password manager, or something similar of that. If it, you know, people are not necessarily going to read the descriptions, but if they do, put it there too. It is absolutely sad, and I'm interested in your thoughts. Sobering story of another problematic website that was designed to be able to help you make sure that you're as secure as possible. And a blog post will also be posted for those who just read the blog. To make a long story short, Brian Krebs released an article talking about a website called eVerify.com. This website, ran by the Department of Homeland Security, otherwise known as DHS here in the United States, was not all cracked up to be. Brian Krebs, according to the article, had a report from a user who was the victim of unemployment scams. The long and the short of it is, eVerify.com is supposed to allow you to be able to lock your social security number so it cannot be used in employment scams. Locking your social security number was definitely something that it did. According to the article, and I didn't blog about this because I want people to read the article and the very awful details, but I will say that the article says that you can, even with a locked social security number, create an account just by using another email address. There are no checks to prove anything. Let's take John, for example. If John were employed by me and I needed to have his social security number, I would be storing it someplace where it is as safe as possible. But let's say I had to let John go. Well, he, in all intents and purposes, would be able to sign up for this website, lock his social security number, and supposedly this site would make it impossible for others to use his social security number to get employment. Wrong. There are no checks, and the article is quite sobering. This reminds me of the big time credit company who had the biggest breach in U.S. history. They created a website in which you, the user, were to figure out if you were part of this big breach. Then, as sobering as that was, there were errors and all sorts of problems. In fact, this particular company ought to be ashamed of themselves, and they should be paying all of us money. As a credit reporting agency, mistakes happen. Software doesn't get patched for whatever reason. But the last thing you want to do is build a website to check to see if you were a problem, as I talked about earlier, and find out that it has had a big time problem. This is not something that makes me happy to report on. Mistakes happen. Fine. The Department of Homeland Security is supposed to protect us and give us information on how to keep us as safe as possible. How hard is it to build a website to check to make sure that you are as secure as possible? The website, Have I Been Pwned, is a website built by Troy Hunt. His name has been mentioned in various podcasts on Security Now. He scours the net, finds data, and then puts it in a database to be searched by you, the average consumer. You enter your email address and it will tell you if there's been a breach with that email address, what was affected, and even details about the breach. It doesn't have any passwords, and it is as secure as possible. But it's a one-man job. The Department of Homeland Security is a whole department in the government. If this website is definitely ran by them, they ought to be ashamed of themselves for building a website that does what it's supposed to do, but doesn't do the proper checks. If Brian signs up with his name, social security number, and a totally different email address, the system should come back and say, "I'm sorry, Brian, you already have an account, and your social security number is locked." I'm glad that I don't build websites like that. That, if I didn't know how to do that properly, would be a pretty bad thing, and my name would be all over the place. It is definitely a problem, and something that we need to take these webmasters of these sites to task. Email, iMessage, tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. You can also text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may go ahead and find me on other social media. This will complete the podcast, everybody, and I look forward to trying to get back into a normal podcasting routine after a very bad month of June. Till next podcast, thanks so much for listening, and make it a great day.